Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premiere Network on Saturday, March 10th, 2018. This is episode 1469. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Wink, the best way to discover new wines you'll love. I love Wink. You will too. But you've got to go to trywink.com/techguy, and you get $20 off your first shipment. TRYWINC.com/techguy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Yes, it's time. Time to talk technology, computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, virtual reality, augmented reality, real reality. 8888-ASK-LEO is my phone number, 888-827-5536. When I say talk, I mean talk with you. Can't do it without you. So get those phones ringing. Kim Schaffer's here to answer them. She's going to pick up your line and paste down your calyx, put a little powder on your nose, get you ready for your big appearance on national radio. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can still call the show. You just use Skype out. That'll work. 8888-ASK-LEO. I was just came back from Austin, Texas, over the last few days. We went down for a big Woodstock for Nerds festival. It's called South by Southwest, and they do three different festivals. The first of them, which is on right now, Friday through Monday, is called the Interactive Festival. That's where the real geeks show up. And then they do South by Southwest film and music. So they have a music festival and they have a film festival. And Steven Spielberg's down there because he's got something that crosses all of those boundaries. He's got a new movie coming out at the end of the month called Ready Player One that is based on a science fiction book that we geeks cherish almost above all others. What's interesting about it, it's about the future, about a young man, of course, right, because that's how you get the nerds interested. It's about me, who really lives in a world where virtual reality is king. And the world, the real world itself is kind of messed up. Sound familiar? And he puts on these headsets, as do many, and enters this amazing world where anything is possible and people get together. And it's going to be, I think, a very interesting science fiction movie. But the Spielberg's down there to show it. It's funny how they, everybody knows there's going to be a screening, but no one knows where. And everybody's like, do you know where it is? It's somewhere down there. And they have a big virtual reality experience, they call it. This is one of the things that the South by Southwest has really become a marketing exposition, frankly, and as has the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. And so they took over a building, like a giant building, and upstairs they've got a virtual reality experience with like beat up old trailers and stuff, and you go in there and it's right out of the movie, and you put on virtual reality headsets and you wander around. And then downstairs they have kind of an 80s themed dance arcade thing, because the movie, even though it takes place in the future, is very nostalgic about the 80s. Oh, another smart move. Ernest Klein knew what he was doing when he wrote that novel. So it'll be interesting to see how that movie goes over. That's not the only thing that was going on at South by Southwest. HBO took over several acres of land out of town. I guess in Texas there are plenty of places to do that. And they built a Westworld, and they put tickets online, and they sold out in 2 minutes. So that was the other buzz down there was, did you get Westworld tickets? No. And you have to sign a release that says all sorts of things, like, you know, you could die. You won't hold the HBO responsible for the loss of any limbs, that kind of thing, which I'm sure is a joke, right? I'm sure it's a joke. Didn't get a chance to do that either, but I tried to get to the Ready Player One thing, but it's kind of like Disneyland. There's a long line to get in. You have to sign all these waivers and all this stuff. And then, so we waited like an hour to get into that part. And then you get in, and then they say, oh, and it's another 2 hours to go through the VR experience. Forget it. We had to go home. I went home. So that's where all the geeks are. If you're wondering where they are today, they're in Austin, Texas, at South by Southwest. Science Magazine study came out this week talking about fake news. They did a big analysis of 4.5 million tweets and retweets from 2006 through 2017. And what they found probably won't surprise anybody. Fake news, aka inaccurate news stories, spread faster and further than true stories. That, in fact, if you want to get a lot of retweets, tweet something outrageous and false, and then it'll spread. Retweet chains. You try it. Retweet chains discussing true news stories took longer on average to reach the same number of people as conversations about fake news. True news also would like max out after about 1,600 people just died. It's like, eh, it's true. Who cares? But false stories, almost 47,000 users compared to the 1,600. But is this a surprise? Is it really? I mean, this is what fake news stories are really often created to grab your attention, to feel true, right? And yet at the same time to be outrageous. Oh, I can't believe it. And then, but of course you believe it, right? Yeah, but of course it's true. I can't believe it. But of course it's true. And they spread like crazy. And that's really, if you ask me what Twitter is all about, there's been lately a spate of articles and stories by people who are giving up Twitter and Facebook and saying, take social media off your phone. It's the latest thing. I did it a few weeks ago. Take social media off your phone. It's just a time sink. It's wasting your time. I'm going to guess most of you don't do Twitter. Most of you do Facebook. That's kind of what the stats are. In fact, we talked about it last week, Beth. I think it was 76% of all American adults are on Facebook pretty regularly. Twitter's more of a specialty product, but it's really an outrage engine. Here's some outrage. You'll see this today on Twitter. A guy I like a lot, Farhad Manju, who's a tech columnist, kind of the tech columnist for the New York Times, did a whole thing about how he gave up social media and digital news for 2 months and only read newspapers. A little self-serving, New York Times. Only read newspapers for 2 months, and how happy he was. How much happier. Then the Columbia Journalism Review pointed out that in those 2 months, Farhad tweeted over as much as 16 times a day, over 1,000 times, and even retweeting news stories. He clearly was... He wasn't... He didn't give up Twitter. Twitter's so hard to give you up. It is the heroin of a certain group of people. It is really addictive for a certain group of people. And it's bad for you. Just like any addictive drug, it's bad for you. Because it's designed to spread not just, I don't even want to say fake news. It's designed to spread outrage. And as somebody has pointed out, all outrages on Twitter are equal. Whether that dress is black and blue or gold and white is equal in every respect to, I don't know, something, you know, the fact that in Hawaii it was announced there was going to be a ballistic missile attack and it's not a drill. It was equal, even though obviously in the real world those things are not equal. The color of a dress is not nearly as important as the fact that the citizens of Hawaii were put into a panic by a false alarm. And yet on Twitter, it's all equal. It's all equal. It's all the same. It's indistinguishable. I don't know. I'm just, I don't look at it much anymore. And I do notice my blood pressure is better. It affects your blood pressure. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We are going to come back in a moment and start focusing on your problems, your technology woes. Leo Laporte, 8888 Ask Leo. Give me a call. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo, Sharon, you're my Sharon, Kim Schaffer. She is answering the phones and helping us, and you've been here answering the phones for hours and hours, and you have come.
You beat me this morning.
I know. I came in early. I know.
I was shocked.
I'm on Austin time. That's why I'm on Austin time.
You're a couple hours early. Yeah. An hour early? A couple hours early?
We have to set the clock forward tomorrow,
today.
Don't we?
Well, I'll do it tonight.
So every year this happens, and we always bemoan it, and I always point out that when the clocks change, the Monday after the spring forward or fall back, either way, mostly spring forward, though, because you lose an hour of sleep. There are more heart attacks. There are more car wrecks. People die because of daylight saving time. Stop the insanity. You know, the funny thing is they voted in Florida to stay on daylight saving time. Mm-hmm. And you can't. You're not allowed to.
What?
You can't. You can stay on daylight standard time, as parts of Arizona and Hawaii do, mm-hmm. because that's the official whatever of the United States. It's not a time zone because we have many, but it's what it is. It's the official thing of the United States. We're in daylight on standard time. But daylight saving time is a thing that you can say, I'm not going to do that. But nobody wants daylight. Nobody wants standard time. We all want daylight saving time, right? Or am I wrong?
I like the end result of what will happen tonight.
I don't like the lighter waking up in the morning.
The day, yes, right. After right. It's not dark at 5 o'clock in right. the evening anymore. But I do not like losing that hour. That
so
losing the hour.
So the Florida legislature approved it. I think Rick Scott's going to sign it. It doesn't matter because it's not up to them. So all the bill can do is say, hey, federal government, maybe you ought to think about changing it. Seems unlikely. I don't think Congress really
I don't think
is in
I'll
a position
see it in my
anything.
Lifetime.
Yeah, but boy, I would like that. I hate the clock change, don't
yeah.
you?
Yeah. No, let's just stick with one.
One thing though I am going to do. I always say I'm going to do it, but this time I'm going to do it. I'm going to get the ladder out and change the batteries in all my
smoke detectors.
You're supposed to do that.
Every time the time changes?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You know, the deal is I always figure, oh, I'm not going to. And then you want to do it because otherwise it's going to wake you up in the middle of the night
with that
little
beep.
Chirp.
Yeah, the chirp drives me nuts.
And then you're going to be sorry. You said, oh, I should have done it at daylight saving time. So I'm going to do it tonight. I'm going to crawl all over the house because.
You have a lot of them.
I got a lot of them. I got a lot of them. We're very safe in the Laporte house. So is there somebody on the line I can talk to help me?
I don't know if they can help you, help them. So Penny's going to go on a fun family vacation, but she owns a business.
Nice.
And she needs to be able to stay in touch and wants to know, is that going to be possible on her cruise ship? Can she take her laptop?
Will
her
phone
work and all those fun
things? I am an expert on all this.
Yes, you are.
Because I go
you
away
do
a lot. Thank you, Kim. Hello, Penny. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good morning, Leo. How are you?
I am wonderful. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. So I am taking my family on a cruise. We're going to Alaska. We're leaving Los Angeles, and we're going to Seattle, I think, and then to Canada, and then on the cruise ship. But I need to take my laptop and my phone with me to stay in constant contact so I can run my business even though I'm not in Los Angeles proper.
This is why we small business owners never get vacations.
That's correct.
I'm glad you did it though. That's great, Penny. And here's some good news. The cruise ship probably does not have great internet. There's only one cruise line that does have really good internet, and I've been on it. It's the Royal Caribbean line. What line are you on?
We're going on the Princess.
Princess Cruises. They're so lovely. The Love Boat. But unless they've upgraded, now, of course, they're all owned by the same few companies, but unless they've upgraded their internet, chances are it's not going to be super fast because the way the internet works on these cruise ships, they use a big satellite dish and something called Inmarsat that gets very, really little bandwidth. Plus, you've got how many people on that boat? Several thousand.
And so
if you have to use the internet and use the boat's internet, A, it's going to be a little pricey, and B, it's going to be very slow unless you get up in the middle of the night to do it. when everybody else on the boat is asleep.
Okay. Uh-huh.
However, because you're on an Alaska cruise, there is some good news. First of all, you're not, except for Vancouver, you're not leaving the U.S. So your cell phone will probably work whenever you're close enough. And in an Alaska cruise, you don't really, you're not out at sea that often. As long as you're close enough to land, you're, who's your carrier?
Sprint.
Sprint. You'll have to check what Sprint's coverage is.
Okay.
In the areas you're going to. But you may be fine because as long as you can get your Sprint phone working and data on your Sprint phone, you can tie your laptop to that. And usually LTE data is pretty fast. So you'll want to check to see how fast Sprint is. When you're in Canada, but that's only one day, right?
I believe so.
Yeah. When you're in Canada, it'll cost a lot. So you when you talk to Sprint or when you look at the Sprint site, you should also find out what it would cost to have one day of international data. Roaming. Because that's going to be your best bet. Or you just say, hey, this is the day I'm going to be out of touch. Is it vital that you be in touch every single moment of the day?
Or- well, we're leaving on a Saturday. So Saturday and Sunday, I don't need to. But the, during the weekdays, I need to be in constant contact.
Constant contact. Not just email. You know.
Well, email. It's emails.
Email's a little easier. The problem is, and you should warn your customers and your employees before you go, that you will be able to receive email, but it may not be instant turnaround. And you know, to send small emails. Don't send you big contracts or pictures or anything that's too big. But text goes pretty quick, and even on a cruise ship, you'll be able to especially if you set your computer to do it at 4 a.m. download email. Here's what we often do. My wife's the CEO of our small company, so here's what she does. She'll get the email in the morning and tell people, I'll get back to you by the end of the day. She can respond to the email because, you know, if you have a good email program, you can respond. And then it'll slowly dribble it out over the ship's internet to the end of the day. The only exception to this, and I expect this is going to change, is Royal Caribbean. I was on the Anthem of the Seas a couple of years ago. They have something I think they call Vroom. Internet service that is remarkable. It's about as fast as your home internet. So if you need internet, that's a good... And but the thing is, if they can do it, why can't everybody do it? I would imagine as ships get refitted that this will start spreading. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So you're going to have a great time and just tell your employees that I can't... this is a vacation, right?
Yeah, I don't get a vacation.
I know. But just tell them, I will promise you will hear from me within 24 hours, but I can't promise I'll give you 1 hour turnaround. How about that?
Right. I'm not as concerned with the employees as I
customers.
Am. We work with regional centers, so I'm more concerned about getting back to the service coordinators at the different regional centers. When they send an email.
And that's they're the kind concern. Of people, if you don't respond within half an hour, will freak out.
Probably, or email me again and say, hey, I emailed you a half an hour ago. What, you know, that type
of thing. That's going to be a problem. Now, most email services or servers have vacation settings where you can say, look, I am paying attention to email, but I'm going to be in and out of service in Alaska. So it may be that I take a little longer to respond than usual. Please be patient, but I will get back to you.
Okay, I could do that setting.
Yeah, have that setting. Now, you're going to want to do that at your server because that'll go out automatically from your server instantly.
Okay.
So do you use Gmail? What do you use?
I use Hotmail still.
Hotmail. I think Hotmail, check in the settings. Look at vacation settings, they call them.
Okay.
And then that way, Hotmail, you know, you don't even, before you even get your mail, Hotmail will say, look, I'm on vacation. It'll be in your name and all that. I'm on vacation, but I do care about your email. I'm just limited by the amount of bandwidth up in Alaska, and I will get back to you, I promise you, as quickly as I can. Something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's called an auto reply, and that will work if you do it on the server because it doesn't connect to you. It doesn't get it from your computer. It gets it from Hotmail.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. And I don't need to bring anything special with me?
No, Princess will have Wi-Fi.
Okay, but you said it's slow.
But it's just,
okay.
It's slow, but it's there. I mean, you're going to find it a little frustrating, but it is there. So, and it's also expensive. You should check the cruise information and find out. Usually you buy packages of minutes. So the key on that is you you log in, you download your email, and you immediately log out so that you're not using up your minutes. You respond to all the email, then you log back in, and as long as the emails are quick and text-based, it won't take too long. So you you will be in touch. It's just it won't be 100% real. It'll be a little frustrating for you.
Okay.
But it will work.
I can deal with it.
Yeah, and the nice thing, because you're in Alaska, as long as Sprint has coverage in the areas, you know, you dock every day or almost every day. It's only when you're up by the glaciers there, there's probably no coverage there. And as you're as you're sailing along the Seward Peninsula and stuff, there might not be coverage there. But as soon as you're in Anchorage or Ketchikan or Sitka, all the towns you're in, you'll have coverage.
Okay, perfect.
It won't be as bad as you think. And besides, you're on vacation. Enjoy yourself.
Well, I'll enjoy myself part of the time and the other part of the time. It's always a working vacation, no matter where I go.
I know. Believe me, I know. We really have to. That's the worst case. The next best case is you have to do all your work ahead of time. So you work twice as hard for 2 weeks, and then you take a vacation.
Right. But see, we get referrals all the time, so that's what I have to be in.
Oh, yeah, I know. You do. I know. We have the same situation with ad sales. Now, one thing do not do is they will have phone service from the ship, the cruise ship. They call it cellular at sea. Whatever you do, don't do that. It's really expensive. And it's just for phone calls. You don't need the phone calls, I presume.
I do not.
Just the email. Email's a lot more affordable, a lot easier. And do as much as you can when you're in port, because that'll be quick.
Okay, perfect.
Have fun.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your help.
Bring a good camera. You're going to see amazing stuff.
Okay, will do.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks, Leo. Appreciate
it. Sure, anytime. It's time for the inestimable Scott Wilkins. I don't know if that's a word. It's Scott Wilkins. I can't estimate him.
It is actually a word.
Inestimable. It's good, right? Inestimable?
Yeah, it's a good thing.
Yeah. Or is it estimable? The estimable Scott Wilkinson. I can never remember. Irregardless, he's here. Scott Wilkinson Scott Wilkinson is a real person, even though he looks like Santa Claus and he sounds like Santa Claus. He is actually our home theater geek, and he joins us every week. But you took last week off. I hope you had a good time.
Had a great time playing brass music in the redwoods of Santa Cruz.
Wow, that sounds awesome.
It was great.
I met another tuba Christmas player. He plays the Midwest version of tuba Christmas. I think it was in Twin Cities. I can't remember what city.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
There's 200 of them all over
I
the
know.
Country.
I know. He loves it. He loves
That's
it.
That's super cool. Did you see him at SXSW?
SX South by Southwest. No, he was up here, but we were at South by Southwest. And as I was mentioning, Ready Player One, they've really got a big push on that. And Westworld. Uh-huh. Two, because the second season's coming, the samurai season.
Ooh.
So this is.
I'm looking forward to Ready Player One. Actually,
it looks good.
It should be good. Now, it's kind of Hunger Games, kind of Tron.
Yeah, a lot of '80s references.
Yeah. But it should look fabulous.
Well, and of course you're the home theater geek, so that's what we care about. Now you saw the current big movie, Wrinkle in Time.
Yeah.
And I'm going to assume you saw it in Dolby Atmos, in a Dolby Vision cinema, sitting in reclining chairs with a fine...
Sadly,
no?
Sadly not. I did see it in Dolby Vision and Dolby Atmos, but here's the weird thing. Dolby cinemas, which in the U.S. are all hosted by AMC, so they're all in AMC multiplexes, and one of the theaters in those multiplexes is a Dolby cinema. And they have reclining chairs, as you say, and it's all very lovely. But some of the Dolby cinemas can play whatever they want. Each theater can decide what they want to put in the Dolby cinema. And some Dolby cinemas are showing A Wrinkle in Time right now, but others are not. They're sticking with Black Panther,
which is also an amazing movie, I'm told.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's amazing. I had a wonderful.
You said the visuals were very good. The high dynamic range HDR visuals were very good.
Yes. In Black Panther and in Wrinkle in Time.
Well, I was going to ask, how did Wrinkle in Time compare?
Yeah, very good. Not quite as good as Black Panther. I felt that they weren't using the entire available visual or brightness dynamic range until the very end. Huh. And then it got super black, and it was lovely. And I mean, the rest of the movie was beautiful too. I mean, the visuals, the CGI is just stunning. Now, some reviews have said, well, yeah, but it kind of looks obviously computer generated. And I'd have to say in some cases that's true, but I sort of didn't care. It didn't matter to me. It didn't bother me, you know. So, and it's just such a visual feast. I mean, you're gallivanting around the universe and seeing visiting all these different planets, and it's really beautiful. It's a beautiful looking movie. The Atmos sound is gorgeous. I mean, they really took it out into the room, you know, because as we know, Atmos not only has speakers around the room this way, but also overhead. And so when things fly over, if the sound also flies over your head, that really increases the sense of immersion, the sense that you're there.
Yeah.
And so A Wrinkle in Time does that very well. One of my complaints about it is that it's got a bunch of teen pop songs in the soundtrack.
Well, guess who it's aimed at?
I know. It's not aimed at me.
No. Although, you know, I loved the book when I was a teenager. It was one of my favorite books.
I read it as a teenager too. Yeah. Exactly. It was seminal.
And in fact, that's a way one of the reasons I'm not going to go see it because I understand it doesn't really, you know.
It does. No, it stays. It does hew to the book. It does. Okay. However, I will say this also, that they added some scenes that aren't in the book. So there's more to the book is all there virtually.
Oh, okay.
But there's more to it than that. And to tell you the truth, I found some of those added scenes to be kind of draggy. And the whole movie is just like a minute under 2 hours.
Yeah.
And it actually felt kind of long.
How, you know, is that something that's changed the length of movies? When I was a kid, I think it was understood all movies are 2 hours, right?
2 hours, right.
Although when I watch the old, you know, like Thin Man movies, those tend to be 90 minutes. Those are shorter.
Exactly. The really old ones.
Yeah, the really
Nowadays,
old ones.
I think 2 hours is considered short.
Short?
Yeah.
Movies are getting longer?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Black Panther, I think, is 2 hours and 20 minutes, something like that.
Huh.
Dunkirk was certainly 3 hours.
It felt
that
like
was,
it.
That was kind of – yeah.
Are we ever getting off this beach? Come on, man. Let's get off this beach.
Just, just how they felt.
Yeah. It's like, well, it was very, very authentic in that regard.
Anyway, so the answer to your original question is I didn't see it in a Dolby Cinema because the Dolby Cinemas near me were playing Black Panther, not A Wrinkle in Time. So I went down to Hollywood, California, where they're –
I've heard
Disney
of Hollywood,
has,
yes. They're in yes. California now. Okay.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. They moved. There is a Hollywood, Florida, which
I
is
know.
Why I say that.
I
anyway,
know.
Disney has its own theater down there called the El Capitan, and they were showing A Wrinkle in Time in Dolby's Vision HDR and Dolby Atmos surround sound, immersive sound. But they don't have the nice seats. It's an old theater. It's one of these old grand theaters, right?
Oh,
with all
the
decor.
But see, I
and
like
stuff.
That.
It's pretty
that.
Cool, except the seats are from that same era.
They haven't upgraded the seats. Well, you know, people had smaller butts back then.
True.
I don't
true.
Know. I don't know. That's, I'm making that up. True. I don't know if that's true. all right. So not necessarily
but it's
the
worth,
best, most comfortable, but a good look.
No.
Yeah.
A beautiful look to the movie and a beautiful sound to the movie. I think I too, like you, was a super big fan of the book. And so when I saw the trailer last year, I said, oh, man, that's going to be great. And for the most part, it is. I really enjoyed it. Yeah. There were some problems with it. I wrote a review on AVS Forum. So if you want to get a deeper
good.
Sense of
that's,
what I.
That's where Scott hangs his hat, the AVS Forum at avsforum.com.
Right. Exactly right.
I wonder if the what's changed for movies. I mean, they're competing now with television shows. We were talking about Westworld, and they're coming back.
Yep.
And, you know, where you have not 2 hours to develop a story, but 10, 15, sometimes 23 hours to develop a show.
Yep.
And characters and so forth. And I wonder if that is somewhat pushing movies to be longer. I don't know. I think
well,
they should be shorter.
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. You know that Netflix just won its first Oscar, right?
I know. And
so that's an important historical thing for movies and yes. so on. Because delivering it at home, it gets an Oscar. I mean, yes. that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's a real movie, even though it never showed in theaters. Did it ever show in theaters?
I don't think so.
No, we're talking about Icarus, the best documentary. Is that what we're talking
about?
It was the documentary of the year. It never showed in theaters. Well, I wonder what the rules are for the Academy.
It must have to show a few times, right? It probably did. Yeah. I don't know that for sure.
But most people will have seen it on Netflix.
Exactly, on TV.
And it's not the first time. I mean, Amazon, of course, last year with Manchester by the Sea, which was funded by Amazon Prime.
Right.
But didn't restrict itself to play on Amazon
Prime. It was still theatrical release.
Yeah, yeah.
So I wonder the movie if the Oscars is changing.
They're going to have to change their rules, maybe, huh?
Maybe. It may very well be.
What is a movie? What does it mean to be a movie?
Right, exactly. And eligible for an Oscar.
Yeah.
I think Wrinkle in Time will certainly get nominations for production design and visual effects and that sort of stuff because it was beautiful.
Well, yeah, maybe I'll go see it then. Nowadays, though, I think I'm not alone. With a good TV, an HDR 4K TV, and a good surround sound system, there's not as much pressure to see it in a theater.
Yep, I agree.
If you're going to be able to see it at home in a good quality. Yep, Scott Wilkinson, that's what he does. He helps us build our own home theater experience at avsforum.com and joins us every week. Thank you, Scott.
Bet.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And now, for your edification, Scott Wilkinson will stick around and answer questions.
I shall. I'm happy to do so.
Thank you.
So, how's everybody doing? I saw a note back here a little bit. Web 9130, waiting out for Isle of Dogs and Early Man. Early Man's going to be hilarious. I'm sure of that. I don't think it's going to be graded in Dolby Vision, though, which is unfortunate because it would look even better at that. But, you know, Early Man is, I don't know, Isle of Dogs. I mean, I assume it's about an island full of dogs. But Early Man is from the same animation studio that brought us Wallace and Gromit and Chicken Run. So it's kind of a claymation, British claymation. Ardmore Studios, Ard something Studios, not Aardvark. Yes, Tokyo Jim, I didn't talk at all about home theater this time. I that is true, and I apologize for that. And Web 9130, you're right. There was an earlier version of A Wrinkle in Time, 2003 it was, and it was a TV movie. It wasn't in the theaters. It was a TV movie, and it was horrible. It was also made by Disney, which is amazing to me. So Disney made this movie in 2003. It was before Madeleine L'Engle, the author of the novel, died. And she thought it was horrible. So, you know, it never went anywhere. It probably still is available on Amazon or somewhere. But I remember watching it and not being happy with it. So I was really happy when this one came out. And it did a much better job, I think. A much better job. Yes, Robert Bigelow, Chicken Run is hilarious. I love that movie. Tachi just installed a new home theater, and OMG, huge difference compared to, a TV with its own speakers or whatever. You bet it's a huge difference. What'd you get? What equipment do you have in there? What display? What speakers? What AV receiver or anything like that? Inquiring minds want to know. Sybil says that Ardmore Studios, what it was, also did The Angry Kid. I never saw that one. I don't know about that one. I'll have to look it up. And Lost in Space is being remade again. Razarius, I don't think I haven't seen the trailers. Compter is suggesting a service called Cinema, Cinema. Isn't that some sort of online movie service? Oh, a monthly movie ticket plans. Oh, okay. All right. So it's kind of like MoviePass. It's a different thing, sort of like MoviePass. That's interesting. I wonder if they show you, we miss you already. Oh, no, I don't want that. Cinema membership, you can get 3 movie tickets for less than the price of 1. IMAX, 4DX, XD, ScreenX, D-Box experience. Dolby Cinemas have a kind of a D-Box. I wonder if it includes Dolby Cinema. If so, then I would be interested in that. I'm not sure MoviePass does. I think it's kind of limited to sort of normal, but somebody there can tell me.
Excuse me, please allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of geek and taste. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo, the phone number. Thank you, Mick. Ed in Temecula is next. Hi, Ed.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, just fine. Sitting here on the porch watching the rain come down.
Isn't it nice, though, to get a little rain?
Beautiful. We need it.
Yep.
So I wanted to talk to you about home theater. Specifically, I'm setting up a room. It's a 20 by 20-ish room. And I want to talk to you about building a video wall.
A video? Well, you know, it's good Scott Wilkinson stuck around.
Yeah, how apropos.
How apropos.
I've got 2 experts on my side.
So when you say a video wall, you want the whole wall to have video?
No. It's
How far distant from the screen will you be?
Approximately 14 feet.
So that is pretty far, and that's what determines how big the screen will be, really, because you want a movie theater experience, I presume. So you want to have it, if you ask the Dolby folks, they have a calculator that I think is aggressive. It says have a much bigger screen than necessarily you would want. Mm-hmm. Where do you sit in the movie theater would be a question to ask, right? If you like, I know people go all the way in the back. My wife will do that. I say, honey, I want to sit down front. I want the big screen. That's really the question to ask is where do you like to sit in the movie theater? Right. Do you want the screen
a closer than further?
Yeah, you want the screen to you're never going to get the screen to like IMAX where you have to look around on the screen. That's not even a good idea. But you want it to kind of get to your peripheral vision. So, how many degrees is that, Scott? I don't know. Is that 60 degrees?
Oh, it's something like 60 degrees, yeah.
What would you recommend screen size for 14 feet?
Well, pretty big. 60 degrees.
You're pretty far back, aren't you?
You're pretty far. 14 feet. The average in a home is like 9 or 10 feet.
Yeah.
So 14 feet's pretty far.
Yeah.
So you're going to want a pretty big screen.
It sounds like he's going to go projection, right?
Well, that was the one choice. You know, it's either projector or dialed into was putting up 4 flat screens in an array and using a matrix.
No. I do not recommend that. I do not recommend that because you will see the boundaries between the screens.
Well, that's true.
And that would be just tremendously distracting to me.
You only see that in trade shows where people are pretty distant, right? And they aren't going to see the boundaries.
If you're not going to use a projector and you have unlimited funds, I would say if one had unlimited funds and wanted to do what you're suggesting, I would go with something new from Samsung called The Wall.
Ooh.
And I've seen those, and they are pretty pricey.
Tremendous, but they're extremely pricey. They're not even available yet. They will be later this year.
Is that the one with the new megapixel or whatever it is?
It's called micro LED.
Micro LED. Okay.
It's a direct emitting light screen with tiny little LEDs that produce the image. And it's 146 inches diagonally. So that would be plenty big for your seating distance. Yeah. But it's going to be in the 6 figures. Easy. Easy.
Yeah, that's not going to work. So
that's not going to happen.
And
right?
This is why I said
90 inches.
You want a projector.
You want a projector. You're absolutely right.
Are they going to be bright enough?
Are you going to be able to control the light in the room? Is the next question.
Yeah, your projector does require that you be able to darken the room.
Yes, either that or you get what's called an ambient light rejecting screen, an ALR screen. And most of the big screen companies make them, and they do allow some ambient light in the room, and you can still have a nice picture on the screen.
Okay.
So that is going to be probably the best recommendation. If you can't control the light completely, then put an ambient light rejecting screen in there, and many projectors. You can get projectors. I recommend not spending less than about $3,000 on a projector in order to get good enough, what I consider good enough quality.
Although, given that, you know, the Runco projectors you see in, you know, really nice theaters and home theaters
can be tens of
thousands of dollars.
Or hundreds of thousands. Yeah, exactly. So $3,000 isn't really very much.
And what brand names do you like for home theaters?
Well, I like Epson in the low end very much. I like...
Should he look for... 1080p, because I know you can't get really a 4K, a true 4K projector. I don't even know if they make them.
Well, you can't. Sony makes them. Sony's the only company.
Expensive.
No. Their least expensive 4K projector is $5,000.
Worth it?
I think so. Absolutely.
Is it HDR?
Yes.
Well, yes. I think if you're future proofing, you're gonna want to go there. So Sony.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. The only problem with the Sony, the $5,000 one, is that its HDMI port doesn't operate at full bandwidth. And therefore, there are certain specific and, at this moment, rare circumstances that it won't work.
Why? Wait a minute. I know. That's a strange oversight, if you ask me.
Well, I think it was a design decision, and I disagree with it heartily, majorly.
Yeah.
Compter is also mentioning JVC. I forgot to mention JVC.
Do they have 4K though?
Not true 4K.
How important is 4K for
much less important than HDR in my opinion?
Because you're so distant at 14 feet.
Oh yeah.
You're not gonna see the pixels.
Unless the screen is huge.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
No. So a JVC would work just fine. An Epson would work just fine. Those both do what I call pixel wiggling. Right, so they take each pixel and they wiggle it quickly back and forth between two positions to simulate 4K.
This is, by the way, not the official term for obvious reasons. I want that TV with the pixel wiggling. What's that? No, you don't. Yeah. Okay, so that's a good thing. That's to simulate. That's interpolating, in effect.
It's interpolating, essentially. Correct. And the JVC is probably the one that most people think of right away as sort of the premier affordable projector line. And they're starting at the $4,000 or $5,000 range as well.
There's also, Ed, you a decision to make on screen. He mentioned this light rejecting screen. Can you paint that on the wall, or do you have to have that be a real screen?
Ooh, I don't know if
because I love the idea, and it's not cheap, but it's probably a little less than a great screen. It's certainly a lot simpler because you don't have to have the screen and hanging and all that. You paint the wall with the screen material.
Yep.
And there really is like a movie wall.
Yep. It's the primary company that produces that is called Goo Systems.
Goo.
G-O-O. Yeah. But you have to be careful about painting it to make sure that it's very smooth texture, right?
You don't want textured drywall. You want flat.
Precisely. Flat. Yeah. Precisely. Yeah. That's the key right there. The other thing I was
going to
mention.
Although the goo is thick, and the goo will somewhat compensate for a little bit of irregularities in the drywall.
Yes, it will. But how you apply it, I think, is kind of important, too.
Yeah. They talk a lot about that on the goo site.
On the goo site, yes. The other quick thing I want to mention is 20 by 20 is not the ideal dimensions of a room. 20 doesn't matter, but a square room is not ideal. So you're going to want to think about acoustic treatments if you want
Because the walls are parallel.
Basically, the room modes, the frequencies at which you get standing waves happen in both directions, right? Both longitudinally and laterally.
Ed, unless this is a hobby thing and you really want to become an expert on this, I would suggest a home theater installer. As much as they are going to add to it, they're going to add expertise that is very hard to get. Mm-hmm. Would you agree, Scott? I mean, somebody who really knows what they're doing, I think, is the best way to go with this.
Oh, yeah. Especially acoustics. That's
Once you're
that's
spending
a tricky
that much
subject.
Money. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
I guess I forgot to ask what the overall budget is.
Well, we've blown his budget, I'm sure.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Ed, at least
it always happens. If you're going to go down the projector path, what can you advise me in terms of lumens? Everything is in lumens.
Hang on for a second. I'm going to let you and Scott talk off the air because we have to take a break. All right, the beauty of this is that we can continue this conversation in the podcast. So I am going to pull Scott back up and Ed back up, and you guys can just enjoy yourself, and I will turn the sound from the radio off. And you've got 511 seconds. Yep.
Excellent, excellent.
So Ed, you're still there, right?
So,
yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah, okay. So lumens. You asked about lumens, which is the amount of light coming out of a projector. And as somebody here in the chat room said, the more the better. And that's generally true. However, I will also say that lumens are to projectors as watts are to amplifiers or AV receivers. In other words, the manufacturers do whatever they can to get the highest possible number.
Sure.
Even if it's, you know, even if it's unrealistic. So, you know, you have to take that with a grain of salt. You can't even compare. You can't even say, okay, well, even if the number is wrong, this one's putting out more lumens than this one, so this one's the first one's going to be brighter. But the manufacturer might have performed that test a different way. So you can't even. It's not even apples to apples, which is really unfortunate.
We don't have an FCC standard for that yet.
Sadly, not. Well, there sort of is, but people don't really follow it. So okay. There isn't really. So I would say more the better, generally speaking. Although I will also say that if you get the projector calibrated, which I suggest you do, I recommend it, it's going to be lower output, lumen output than what the specs say, or than the uncalibrated mode. So if you measured the light output of a projector before you calibrated it and then after you calibrated it and you measured it in the same way, the calibrated output would be lower. So there's that. And that's another reason to either use an ambient light rejecting screen or to be able to completely control the ambient light in the room. Okay. So that's going to be one issue. Like I said, the acoustics are going to be pretty bad in a square room, just by nature. So acoustic treatments are going to be kind of important. Somebody here in the chat room was saying also multiple subwoofers. And I do agree with that. If you get at least two subwoofers, mm-hmm. that will help, and you place them properly, that will help reduce the what are called room modes or standing waves. And somebody else in the chat room mentioned, you know, is there a buildup in the middle of the room? Well, yes, there is at certain frequencies. So you don't want to sit in the dead center of the room. You want your seating to be a little off center. So there'll
be other things in the room too. So it's not just a room.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Now, if you're going to have a lot of carpeting or, you know, fluffy wallpaper, then maybe it'll be okay. I kind of doubt you'll have fluffy wallpaper, but
probably not.
but you do want to give some thought to it. Now, are you a DIYer? Are you going to like put this together yourself?
Well, that was the intent, and I am. I've got an engineering background, and I've been...
Oh well, then you can certainly do it. You can certainly do it. I definitely recommend going to at my website avsforum.com.
Certainly will.
Where there's a forum there called, I think, Dedicated Theater Builder or something like that. Okay. And you'll see a bunch of people who have built their own theaters. So that should – and they're very helpful and ready and willing to help people. And they've got – you know, obviously they've got collective experience far more than I do. So, you know, you go there, you post a question, and you'll get a lot of help. No question.
Great.
Or rather, a lot of questions. I also recommend you take a look at on the homepage of AVS Forum, there's a tab, one of the things in the nav bar is called Features, and then under that is Home Theater of the Month. And every month I feature a home theater. This month, March, is a completely DIY home theater. The guy built everything with his own two hands and spent under $11,000 for everything.
Wow.
So that was very inspirational. I mean, some people spend, you know, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 or more, and sometimes that involves hiring, you know, a contractor to come in and install it and do everything. As Leo said, that's a good thing to do if you need more expertise than you have. But I think if you go in, on AVS and look at a bunch of the build threads, are called build threads, of people who have built their own home theaters, you'll get a lot of ideas.
Okay. I'll certainly do that. Thank you for that.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot.
One other quick question, or you've got to
sure.
go?
Sure. No, you got time.
No, we got time. 100 and some seconds.
Okay. Back to the LCD path. If I remove the bezels, does that alleviate some of the banding that we have the issue with?
Oh, you're talking about the borders?
Yes.
Yes, but not entirely. And since you're an engineer, you probably aren't afraid to try and do that, but you'll certainly void the warranty.
That's true. That's one of the things that I would take advantage of.
Yeah, and if you, I mean, for LCD, for say 65-inch LCDs, I'd have to do the math. What does that come out to in total screen size?
30 diagonal. But I was going to go with 445s.
Oh, 445s. Okay. So that makes a total of what?
That gives you a 90 diagonal.
Okay. So there are no 90-inch LCD TVs available anymore. They're coming. There are actually, Samsung showed an 85-inch 8K, although that's going to be mega expensive too, at CES this year. If you could get by with a 75-inch, you can get some pretty good deals, you know, on 75 inches. We just posted on AVS the prices of the new TVs, the 2018s from LG and Samsung. And for example, Samsung has a 75 inch Q6 for $3,500.
75s might be big enough, huh?
Might be.
Scooch the couch a little closer.
All right.
You know, what'll happen if you get the 75 and you're sitting 14 feet away, you'll go, you might say, this is great, and then you're fine. Or you might say, right. Yeah, let's get a little closer. And if you have 3 feet you could scooch in, that might make a difference, you know? Calibrate your distance to the screen.
Exactly.
75 is about as big as you can get, though, right?
Yes.
Except for the Samsung thing that they're doing.
The Samsung thing. There are a couple other companies that are talking about 85 or 88-inch TVs, but those are still pretty expensive.
Crazy.
The 77-inch LG C8 OLED is $9,000. So that's pretty expensive.
Vizio apparently has a 75-inch on sale right now, according to the chat.
They do. In fact, they go up to 80.
Yeah.
And that'd be all right. And the Vizio at, I think they have an 80-inch. If you can get that in a P-series, the P-series is the one to get from Vizio. The step-down M-series is okay, but the P-series is better.
Ed
so.
And Scott, I'm going to have to let you go. Thank you, Ed.
All right.
I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you
great
for everything. I loved it.
All right. Take care. Have fun. Thank you, Scott. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.
All right. Take care. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smart watches and all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. You want to talk high tech. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. 888-ASK-LEO. The website, and I should mention this more often. I wish I did. I just forget. Is techguylabs.com. And it's free. There's no sign up. There's no fee to join it. But that is where everything we talk about on the show gets put and is, you know, the links and everything. So you don't have to write anything down. James DeRuvo is out there working so hard. Thank you, James, to get everything we talk about on the website. And then after the fact, we put audio and video from the show. Yeah, we even shoot video of the show. I don't know why. Up there. And you can, so you can, if you hear something and you want to know more, you can go and read about it. You can actually comment there as well, ask a question, or if you're yelling at the radio saying, I've got a better way, you can do that there too. It's all free. TechGuyLabs.com. On we go with the show, and Al's on the line from Upland, California, our next caller. Hi, Al.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm a 27-year survivor of working for General Telephone.
Oh, wow.
And left the system in 95, so I come out on the cusp of the wave of technology, so I know just enough to be dangerous. Recently, I've had to go to satellite internet using HughesNet, and because we're in a mobile home park and we really only have two choices, either satellite or we could use DSL, which is what I was using.
Right.
But I could only get to a max of 5 download. Fortunately, with satellite, I can get far more than that. But I've also had to become very conscious of the amount of data I'm using.
Yes, indeed.
And so what I'm wondering is there some kind of software or something I can put into the net that I can keep good track of multiple devices and how much data they're using?
You want one of those power meters, the electric meters that are on the side of the house telling you how much you've used. But instead of electricity, you want it to monitor data. Now, there's certainly ways to do this for individual devices. As you probably know, your smartphone will tell you how much data you've used. Windows 10 now has a feature that will tell you how much data it's used. But you want to monitor everything. All the devices, including probably, I don't know, you watch Netflix, maybe a Roku or an Apple TV or something.
Well, I have a TV that's on the net, but it's just using, it's just regular data.
Yeah, but it's still using bandwidth. So in other words, in order to get that information that, by the way, I would think HughesNet would give you that information. One way to do is check the ISP. Most ISPs, especially those with bandwidth caps like HughesNet, will tell you.
They do, yes. I've got they have a meter type thing.
Right.
It's general in and out of.
You just cut out. I think I lost him. He was cutting in and out as it was. Let's see.
It's a pretty basic meter. Back. It's broken down into hourly or anything like that. It basically just shows a day.
And you want something more granular, and in particular, you'd like to see which devices, right? Individual devices.
Correct. What it amounts to is between my wife and I, and we're the only two in the house, we have two iMacs, two iPads, and two cell phone 8s.
Right. So the best way to do this is in a router, because the router, the problem is you have satellite internet, which means you probably are using their router, right? Or do you have your, are you able to have your own router connected to the satellite box?
Yes.
You are. Okay. So many routers have this kind of information, bandwidth usage information built into them. Yours might even. Do you know what kind you have?
I don't. The router that we're using right now is just the one from HughesNet.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, still look in there, because it's in their interest that you keep an eye on bandwidth use. They're trying to, you know, they have all these fair access rules and so forth, and they're really trying to. That's one of the limitations of satellite internet, is that they pay very close attention to bandwidth use, and it's easy to trigger something. So I guess you need to get a router. You can use a third-party router. That's good news. That will have bandwidth usage statistics in it, and there are lots of them. I use Edge Router X from a company called Ubiquiti. That's about $50. A very inexpensive router. It has that information built into it. You can actually do a lot of interesting things. It's very geeky. Including monitoring broadband consumption by device. Because as you know, every time a device gets on your network, it's given an IP address. So you'll have to do a little bit of legwork to say, yeah, that there, that device, that's the Roku, or that there thing, that's my iPhone. But generally, you'll get some sort of indication as to what it is. Android phone, it'll say, or it'll say Apple iPhone, and then you can assign it to the right person. So the key is to look and see if there's a traffic meter in your router. Oh, many, many routers do have it. I would be surprised if the Hughes router doesn't. But if it doesn't, Ubiquiti's Edge Router X is $50. TP-Link routers, I believe, do that. I think the Asus routers will have that. Just look for a router with information about bandwidth usage by device. That's the key. Chat room, if you have a favorite router that you use that has this kind of bandwidth monitoring, go ahead and fire away in the chat room. We'll capture that. We'll put it in the show notes at techguylabs.com. So a lot of manufacturers, this is increasingly common, frankly, in routers, that they're monitoring that kind of per-device bandwidth usage. It's very handy to have, right? Kind of know what the bandwidth hogs are. And even more sophisticated routers will do something called quality of service, where they will QoS, where they will say, okay, this device is prioritized. You're just getting email on that, but you're streaming video on this one. So this one's going to get all the packets in order. And then when we're done doing that, we're going to give you your email. That kind of thing is very handy. Asus routers, my Asus, I believe, had that. Missing says his Asus router has a bandwidth log. The Nighthawks. A lot of them do. I'm not sure which I would recommend. TP-Link makes some really nice routers. I would start there. They're very inexpensive. And as I said, I do get those stats from my Edge Router X, which I like a lot. That's from Ubiquiti, Ubiquiti. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. If you have a better suggestion, the Zycel Netgear. Netgear? No, I think you mean Netgear, right, Roastru? Yeah, I think so. Zycel routers. I'm not sure I recommend Zycel routers these days. They're a little pricey, and they've had some security issues that worry me. TP-Link I like a lot. Those are very good routers. My phone number, 8888 Ask Leo. The website, techguylabs.com. We're collecting routers in our chat room at irc.twit.tv. Lots of ways to play our game. Please give me a ring. I wasn't really going to try some wine during the radio show, but now it's time for Wink. I love Wink. We went down and visited their facility. They're a winery, by the way. They're not a wine reseller. This is really important. We went down and visited them in L.A. A couple of weeks ago and had a wine tasting. Fabulous, delicious wine from Wink, W-I-N-C. Now, if I'd ask you, pick out a wine you'll love but you haven't had before, where would you start? You've never tasted it before. Start with Wink because they have wine experts that match. In fact, if I should go to the website because it's so cool, they match the wines they recommend to your taste buds. So go to trywink.com/techguy, trywinc.com/techguy. And the onboarding process, it's really great. They ask you what you like. So let's get started, shall we? How do you like your coffee? Strong and black, mild, nothing in it. Cream and sugar, frappuccinoed, I don't. This is not about coffee, but they're trying to get a sense of what you like. I actually like it with cream, okay? How do you feel about salt? I put it on everything. Use it. Sometimes bothers me when food is undersalted. Like the taste, don't miss it. I think I'm going to say second of those. Do you like citrus? Love it. Earthy flavors, black mushrooms, truffles. So what we're doing is we're going through a taste profile here. Simple questions that, frankly, no wine store clerk is going to ask you or even be able to translate into a recommendation. But once you answer these, Wink has a good idea of what you like and can make a recommendation. Select red or white or both. Wink works with top winemakers and growers from around the world. They make their own wine. And then they ship it to you. Now, you have to check to see what your state regulations are, but in most states, you can get. I just got my Wink box, so this is a good time to open this up. I have found some of the best wines I've ever had from Wink. Four wines, You can get it once a month, which is just about right. Have it for a special meal or a special occasion. Although, I have to say, we have a Pinot that they make at Wink that I like so much. Maybe I'm going to get a couple extra bottles of that. It is literally a wine company. They make their own wine. Every year there are insanely delicious wines. Get ready for the summertime. Their Summer Water Rosé is super popular. I had some of that. I loved it. Here's my, can you see this? Here's my Wink wine. I'm going to open it up. All the information you need, nicely packaged in the Wink box. Let's pull out some Wink wine here. I love the labels too. Kin and Country. It's a Cabernet Sauvignon, Vista del Sol Vineyards. Some of these are wines that you, I think most of these are wines you can't get anywhere. Oh, this is a Malbec from Argentina. You know what? I think Lisa picked these wines. She loves the, I can tell, she loves two Malbecs. Yeah, that's Lisa right there. She loves the Malbecs. And here's a California wine, a Cabernet Sauvignon oak-aged Pacificana. So Wink is a great way to get introduce yourself to new wines, new flavors, new tastes. Each month, new delicious wines. There's no membership fees. You can skip over any month, cancel any time. Shipping is covered, so if you don't like a bottle they send you, they'll replace it with a bottle you love. No questions asked. It's a great way to get to know wine, and they have some special wines. I have another box, which I don't want to open, but there's some special wines in here that just you can't get anywhere. They're so good. So why settle for the same bottle you get every time you go to the store? Discover great wine at a very affordable price today. In fact, if you go to trywink.com/techguy, trywinc.com/techguy, you get $20 off your first shipment. trywink.com/techguy. I met the winemaker at Wink. They have a wine. They pick the grapes at midnight. They don't pick it in the daytime, but they need it to be cool when they pick the grapes. And it's the most amazing wine, and there's not very much of it because there's only a few small vineyards where they grow these grapes. Unbelievable. But you can get it at Wink. Trywink.com/techguy. Get you $20 off right now. And I think you will find some new favorites. No membership fees, just great wine. Wink with a C, W-I-N-C. Trywink.com/techguy. Lisa, you've been holding out on me. This is the one we like, right? Is this the one that was picked at midnight?
The Field Theory? I believe it was.
I think it was the Field Theory. Yeah. I think it was. Lisa's been holding out. Look at these. These are cool little bottles. I have to hold up like this. They're kind of special bottles. And you got the two Malbecs, right? I knew that was you. You love your. Yeah, so this is a regular bottle. It's the same amount of wine, though, right?
Yeah.
It's just a kind of fun looking. Yeah. Hand-picked. De-stemmed, fermented whole berry, aged 9 months in neutral French oak barrels. The Field Theory. This is the one we loved from Paso Robles, right?
And you can buy that on the website.
You can get this on the website? Look, if you don't believe me, just try. That Field Theory is so good. It is our regular pour now, right? If I have a nice steak,
yes.
When we make a nice steak, we get the Field Theory out. It is so good. My mouth is watering. Try Wink. .com/techguy. That Field Theory blew me away, but I can't wait to try these Malbecs. Those are from Argentina. This one, Kin and Country, Vista del Sol, Lodi. Just great wine that you will drink and love. And the shipping's always included, which is really great. And it's not a resale. I really want to emphasize that. They're not selling other people's wines. They make their own wine. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo the phone number. I get around. I'm going to get around right now to Sylmar, California. That's where Gary is. Hi, Gary.
Yes. Good morning, Leo.
Good morning. How are you today?
I am doing fine. I just want to thank you for taking my call. I have something of an embarrassing confession. I have an old 3G Android phone, which is on its last legs, believe it or not. It's got voice, text, internet, and a basic camera. But the kicker is, the reason why I kept this phone is that it has a slider keyboard for my stubby fingers. I cannot stand those virtual keyboards. So I'm desperate as to what you can recommend. And I'm willing to pay anything in the neighborhood of $300 if that's possible. So anything you could suggest is appreciated.
Yeah. BlackBerry still makes Android. They make Android phones now, by the way, not BlackBerry phones. But they still make Android phones with keyboards. I had the BlackBerry Priv. That's under $300. I think $229 right now on Amazon.com. Their newer device, the Key One, has a somewhat better keyboard, but it's also $500. The nice thing about these BlackBerries is they're pretty clean Android. They've done a fairly good job of it. There aren't a lot, unfortunately, of Android devices with keyboards anymore. In fact, I think BlackBerry may be the last company making them. They were the first company to make phones with keyboards and the last. They're never giving up. although, you know, I had a Priv. I was impressed by it. These are tiny keys, though. I don't know. The slider keyboards generally are bigger keys. They're almost normal-sized keys. So one option for you is to get a better phone, because this isn't the greatest phone, but maybe get a Motorola Moto G5 Plus, for instance, which should be somewhere in your price range, somewhat in your price range, and then get a maybe external keyboard for it, a Bluetooth keyboard. Who was it? I want to say it was some Hollywood celebrity made a slip-on keyboard for Android devices. And he got sued by BlackBerry, I believe, because they said, wait a minute, that's our keyboard you're sliding on. I don't know if they're still out there, these add-on keyboards. I'm trying to see if I can find it. Who was it that made that? Remember that? It wasn't Ashton Kutcher. It was one of those guys. Was it Will.i.am? Maybe. I can't remember. Anyway, I don't know if that's still around. But that was an interesting idea. You take a normal... Oh, it was Ryan Seacrest. Absolutely right. It was Ryan Seacrest, come to think of it. And he made it for the iPhone. Thank you, Adasync. Adasync in our chat room has a better memory than I do. It wasn't for Android. It was for the iPhone. I don't know if it's still out there. It was kind of a kludgy invention because it slid onto the bottom of the iPhone. Compter is saying that Samsung makes slide-on keyboards for the Galaxy S8. Maybe they'll make one for the S9. I don't know. I think you're better off, frankly, just getting one with one built in, and that would probably be, in this day and age, a BlackBerry. The good news is the BlackBerry Priv isn't so expensive. BlackBerry kills Ryan Seacrest's iPhone keyboard. It was called the Typo. Okay, see, there's a problem right there. The lawsuit settlement, this was from a few years ago, means no more Typo keyboards. I guess Seacrest decided not worth getting sued. So they made it for the iPhone 6. BlackBerry sued him. According to press releases issued by BlackBerry, Typo agreed to permanently discontinue selling keyboards for smartphones and mobile devices. That's it. never again.
Seemed like a good idea at the time.
I think really there's only one recommendation in your price point, and that's the BlackBerry Priv, P-R-I-V. You still buy it on Amazon. It's an unlocked phone. You would put in the SIM card that matches your particular carrier. And in almost all cases, you can do that. Pat is next. Hi, Pat. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Welcome back.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
I'm doing great. What can I do for you?
Hey, I just had a question. I have an old Samsung phone, and I have a metal clipboard. If I get one of the magnet with a sticky back and stick it on the back of my phone,
it will not hurt it. It's very common nowadays, in fact, to put magnets on the back of smartphones for mounting in the car and so forth. I've seen a number of devices that will do that. Pretty strong magnets. These new magnets are using a new magnetic rare earth material that is very, very strong. And then you need that if it's going to just hang off a magnet in your car. It can't fall loose. And that doesn't seem in any way to bother phones. So, Yes, you can. And there are a number of companies that make these. Look for magnetic phone cases. For a long time, I used a company called Rockform, R-O-K-F-O-R-M. They made some great cases that had very strong rare earth magnets in the back of the phone. And then they made mounts that you could put all over the place. And you just, whoop, the phone would just, boom, boom, right on there with the magnet. It would work very well. Somebody's reminding me that there is a new company doing a Kickstarter. In fact, I actually paid for this. I'm looking forward to getting it. A clamshell, Android clamshell PDA called the Gemini. Now, if you ever use a Scion, which I did, I loved back in the 90s. I loved my Scion. It's about the size of an eyeglasses case. And you'd open it up, and it would have a kind of wide screen, not color in those days. It's color now in this new device. And it had a fairly decent keyboard with almost real full-size keys. So Gemini, which is a phone from a United Kingdom company called Planet Computers, is they're making this now, not in your budget at $300. I'm pretty sure they did a crowdfunding on this because I think $599 for the LTE model. Although that's a good price considering that, you know, the new Samsung S9 is, what was it, 720, 740 they're starting at. So I think that's going to be pretty good. They have an LTE model. If you want to save a little money, you can get a Wi-Fi only model for $499. It's got a 64 gigs of storage, and you can use it as a phone as well as a kind of a portable computer. I look forward to. I can't remember. You have to see where I ordered that. I made a pledge to myself. I'm not going to buy any more Kickstarter or Indiegogo projects because I've been burned and disappointed so many times. I finally got my LED light-up eyelashes. Yeah, I paid a lot for those, and it turned out it took almost a year to get them. Yeah, no, I did buy those. It took almost a year to get them, and I'll show you sometime. And and like within a month of me buying this thing on Kickstarter, there were 100 companies ripping them off on Amazon for a quarter of the price. So it wasn't a good choice. I made a bad choice. I got to live with it. I'll see if I can find this Gemini. It's an interesting idea. I would love to see the, you know, like the handheld portable computer come back. 8888 Ask Leo. More of your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. No news on Toots the Unicorn. The Kickstarter I funded that, or was it an Indiegogo? I think it was an Indiegogo that, a unicorn that farts rainbows. No, haven't gotten that yet. I think that one died. Where did I buy the Gemini? I'm pretty sure I did buy that one. Because I was such a fan of the Scion. Yeah, Indiegogo. There it is. Yep. He's been everywhere. My friend Johnny Jett travels the world, helping us travel better through technology, joins us every week. He's at the airport right now. But this is a perfect example of a man who can use technology. I'm seeing a picture of Johnny Jett. Are you going to Winnemucca, Mac? Where are you going?
I'm in the Miami airport. You can probably hear the overhead announcement right now.
I can, but you still sound great. You must be. Are you connected to Ethernet? How are you doing this?
I'm on my Acer Aspire S7, and I literally just cruised through security, and I logged on my computer.
You're on Wi-Fi, airport Wi-Fi.
Airport Wi-Fi. 1 minute before you called, and I'm
amazing.
And I wasn't sure. I was going to have to call in and say I might be a little bit late today, but I was able to cruise through security.
Johnny, you rock.
Traffic.
Look at this guy. I'm here. Look at this guy.
I was speaking at a conference in Fort Lauderdale, the biggest cruise conference called Sea Trade.
So let me ask you, because we had a caller. She's going on a Princess cruise to Alaska, which is a wonderful trip. Yes. But she's worried about bandwidth. And you and I have talked before about Royal Caribbean, which has this amazing Vroom bandwidth that is unparalleled. Are other cruise ships going to start doing this? Are they talking about that?
That's a good question, and I should have walked the floor a little bit more to find that answer.
Ask them, will you? Because
I've done a Princess cruises before. I actually did Twitter. Actually, Princess Cruise about 8 years ago had the first Twitter ever cruise, and I was part of that.
You wouldn't want to go on a Twitter cruise these days.
No.
You'd be joined by all the nuts in the world and a bunch of Russian bots. Hello. My name is Kerry. I'm from Indianapolis, Indiana. Good to meet you. Здравствуйте. Well, ask next time, because I'm curious if any of the – because obviously technology exists. RCI has it.
Oh, yeah. And everyone realizes that everyone wants to be connected. I'm sure they're going that route. And they don't want to pay a lot of money. And so that's – cruise lines realize that, you know, if they want to get these people they got to be connected.
You pay a lot for this room service from RCI. I think it was $60
But, like, the river cruises don't charge a penny.
They're in the middle of a country. Where you're out in the ocean, you've got to use a satellite.
Exactly.
And that can be expensive. They do this – they have dedicated satellites aiming at the ship. So it's really, I'm sure, expensive for them. And maybe it makes sense for them because they have such big ships with 5,000 passengers. But it would be wonderful to be able to be – well, frankly, I want to do my shows from the ocean.
You'd be living –
wouldn't it be cool if I could do the radio show on a cruise ship?
I would love it. And I'd like to be a guest.
You would be my guest every week.
I could be your sidekick. I could be Ed McMahon.
Yeah. So all right. So tell me about every week you join us with a great app, and a great website. Tell me some of those.
All right. So my app this week, you know, I came down to Florida, and yesterday my sister called me up last minute and said, "Do you want to play golf?" I'm like, "Yeah, I haven't played golf in years." So anyway, I played golf, and then I discovered this Golf Now app.
Ooh.
It's called Golf Now, and it's free for Android and iOS.
Yeah.
And if I did play golf often, or even if I, you know, when I traveled, I would use it because I would at least try it out. And I haven't used it yet because they give you the best tee time rates at over 6,000 golf courses in the U.S. and internationally around the world.
This kind of makes sense. So there's like Open Table for restaurants, which all the restaurants love because it brings them new business. This is like Open Table for golf courses.
And you don't need to call the golf course. You can make your reservation through the app. So you don't have to spend the time, you know, on hold. And also what they say they do is they'll tell you – I think it's a premium version, this part. They'll help you choose which golf club is the right one.
They have an Apple Watch app that will say, okay, you're on – it's 543 yards, a par 5. We'd recommend you pick the 9-iron. The 9-iron. And Laporte picks the 9-iron, and he's on the green. No, I don't think they do it in a golf voice, but they do have an Apple Watch app, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, and that's cool. And, you know, I did read one of the comments saying they only use the courses that really need help, that they're, you know, are hurting for business. So I don't know if you're going to get Pebble Beach or anything like that.
You know what? There's some great muni courses. I'm not a golfer, but I'm told there's some great municipal courses. There's lots of courses that are underattended that have much lower costs that you can have a lot of fun on.
Yeah, and this is supposedly will save you up to 80% on certain courses. So, listen, anything that saves you up to 80%, even 20%, is worth at least checking out.
Golf Now. You can go to golfnow.com to get the app.
And I almost hit a hole-in-one yesterday, by the way. It was my first time playing golf in years, but I was just feeling it.
You should. And you should get a hole-in-one. We'd have to call you Johnny
Putter. I put
it
on my Facebook
Putter
page so you can see that.
Oh, good. Okay. Johnny Jett
on Facebook. And I got a website for you. We still got time?
Yep.
All right, so this one, you know, how many times have you had your friends or colleagues saying, hey, you want to meet halfway somewhere? And you're like, where should we go? I have it happen to me all the time. So this website's called whatshalfway.com.
Now, John says you should be Johnny T-Shot. Okay.
Johnny T-Shot.
What's halfway?
whatshalfway.com. So you put in your two starting points. You can use address, zip codes, cities, and it's not limited to the U.S. It's international, and you can then select the type of venue, accommodations, food or drink, or if you want to meet at a restaurant or a bar.
It's like that that song, that old song, country song, Meet in the Middle. You can
meet in the middle.
Oh, and that's so cool. That is a silly thing, but it's good.
It's great for travelers.
I'll meet you halfway. Wow. So halfway between Miami and where I am right now, which is Petaluma, California.
Oh, it's going to be like Kansas.
Yeah. Let's see. What kind of venue? Accommodation, food or drink, nightlife, fun and family, cultural shopping. Let's have lunch. Let's see what's halfway.
I'm ready. I'm hungry.
Let's see what's halfway. It is Texas. Well, I was just there. Look at that.
Okay.
Ozona, Texas is exactly halfway. But you can change the range.
But you would most likely use it for like between Petaluma and San Francisco.
Right.
And then they'll tell you to meet in Tiburon or wherever. Right. Or Mill Valley.
I know where we're going to meet. What is that beautiful hotel overlooking the bay in Sausalito?
Oh, Sausalito. Yes. Cavallo Point. Cavallo, one of my favorite hotels.
Let's meet there for lunch. Cavallo Point Hotel. How about that?
Circle's a restaurant. Yeah, it's a great. Definitely.
I think we did that actually one time.
We did. We had dinner at Murray Circle.
Well, that was good. So this is called. I love this idea. This just shows you there's no idea that you can have that doesn't have a home on the internet. MeetHalfway.com. They should have called it Meet in the Middle, but then they would think it was about hamburgers or something, right? MeetHalfway.com. Johnny Jett, you won't tell us where you're going.
I can't tell you where I'm going, but I'm excited. I'm getting on a big bird, a 777-200.
You can't or you won't?
I can, but I won't.
Yes, you won't. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
No one's stopping you, Johnny, but it is a fun game. Where the heck is Johnny Jett going?
If they follow me on Instagram or Twitter, then they'll know. I put little clues. I say, guess the airport. I don't want to, you know, spoil it.
Well, we know now. We've got a head start because we know you're in Miami.
That's true.
So a 777 from Miami. And how long will you be in transit for?
I will land for another 8 or 9 hours.
Okay. I got a pretty good idea then. you're not going to the Faroe Islands. I can tell you that.
No,
right
I'm definitely not going there.
Johnny Jett, his website.
I got a tip for you, by the way.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Quick second. Yeah, so when you're in the Miami airport, there's a couple. There's a couple good lounges. There's a Centurion Lounge here.
Yeah.
So if you have an American Express Platinum card or higher, you can get in for free. Otherwise. Oh. You can get in if you have a regular American Express card. Even the green one will cost you $50.
It's worth it, though, for a nice lounge if you've got a big layover.
But that lounge is usually packed, so just go for the food. And then if you have status with American Airlines or have access to their lounge, then you go there and you do your work, which I'm about to
do. Bring in food from the Centurion Lounge.
No,
to the...
you eat at the Centurion Lounge.
Oh, okay.
I'll eat the bar standing up, and then I'll go over to the American
Lounge. Go to his website for tips like this, johnnyjett.com. He'll scrounge anything anywhere. Thank you, Johnny. Follow him on Twitter and Instagram. We'll see you next time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Bye-bye. Oh, Johnny. I love it. Scrounge the meal at the Centurion and then go over to the American Airlines.
Yeah, I'm hungry right now.
Yeah. So 9 hours. Have a great trip. And will you be here next week?
I think I'll be in L.A.
Okay. You're amazing. Leo Laporte. The tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. The phone number if you want to talk high tech. I'd love to talk to you right now. We got Bruce on the line from Anaheim, California. Hello, Bruce.
Hello, Leo.
Welcome. What can I do for you?
Well, I recently moved into a retirement home, and there are a lot of people around here that are not very tech savvy.
Are you going to be their go-to tech guy in the home? I bet you
well,
are.
Well, I hope not.
Oh.
But I will for a few people.
Don't tell them you know anything then.
The people here are all in their 80s, mostly.
Uh-huh.
And I've got three women in particular that I'm trying to find a computer for. My wife and two other women, and I'm willing to hold classes for the three women.
Oh, isn't that great? And, good for you. That's great.
And I would like to buy computers that are all the same so that we don't have different computers. I would buy one first for my wife.
Good.
And get it configured and see how it really operates. And then I would have the other two women buy their computers and I would configure them for them. And then I would hold classes for the three women. And I was looking at Chromebooks.
Great idea.
We have our own Wi-Fi system here.
Okay.
And I think mostly all they're going to be doing is surfing the web.
Yep.
and doing email. And I don't need a very powerful computer.
Are they going to be using an email system that you'll set up for them, or does some of them have existing email?
Well, essentially, none of them have existing email.
Okay. Chromebook will work with any web-based email system. But of course, because Chromebooks come from Google, it's the Google operating system. It probably is the easiest to use Google's own mail system. Although there are probably easier to use email systems that are just as free as Google's own mail. But the key is you need to use one that's web-based, because really all a Chromebook is Google Chrome. So if you can't do it with Chrome, you can't do it, pretty much. Although I've found I use a Chromebook all the time, I can do pretty much anything I want to do. And I would imagine the advantages of a Chromebook might really make this a good choice for you. For one thing, they're less expensive. They're very hard to screw up. You don't have to worry about viruses or hacking in any way. So security becomes almost not, nothing to worry about. It's very secure. You're going to want to pick, depending on their eyesight, one with a good screen. Most Chromebook screens tend to be a little bit smaller. You'll want to pick one with a usable keyboard as well. That's an advantage over something like the other device that I might recommend, which is an iPad. A lot of older people love, my mom loves her iPad. She still uses a MacBook, but she really loves her iPad because it's so easy to use, so simple. But the screen's bigger on a Chromebook. It's less expensive in some cases than an iPad. And it's certainly far more capable when it comes to web browsing and things like that. So I think you've got the right idea. I think that's a great idea.
I have an iPad that I don't use, and I tried to get my wife to use it, and she doesn't like it because it doesn't have a keyboard.
There you go.
I have my eye on a Acer 14-inch screen.
Yes.
It's got about 4K or 4 gig of RAM and about 16 gig of storage.
Yep.
And I think that should be sufficient.
That's complete. This is one of those nice aluminum ones, I presume. This is a gorgeous, gorgeous laptop. They're going to love it. It's one of the bigger screens. 14 inches is a good size. I don't think anybody will have trouble reading that. And, of course, you can in Chrome make text bigger, so they can make it as big as they need. I highly recommend it. 4 gig is pretty common for the RAM on Chromebooks. You don't need more. I don't recommend less, but you don't need more. And 16 gigs is token storage, but that's because of the way a Chromebook works. You're really not encouraged to save stuff to your Chromebook. If you have photos, you save it to Google's Photos in the cloud, not onto your Chromebook. If you create documents, you tend to use Google's Docs, and theirs are stored in the cloud. So Chromebooks don't come with a lot of storage because, although I have to say 16 gigs, it's funny that I'm saying that's not a lot of storage. You obviously remember, Bruce, the day when a 2-gig hard drive in a computer was considered wow. But we've gotten so used to terabyte hard drives that 16 gigabytes doesn't seem like so much. It's more than enough for the basic usage, and they'll store everything else in the cloud.
I started out with 16 kilobytes in my first computer.
Yeah, that's the RAM. But yeah, I remember very well buying our first hard drive. It was $5,000. It was a whopping 5 megabytes. I take pictures that wouldn't fit on that hard drive. One image today wouldn't fit on that hard drive. But that was, in the mid-80s, that was a lot of storage. 16's plenty. 4 gigs of RAM, 16 gigs of storage. Those Acers are gorgeous. I highly recommend them. I believe they will also run Android apps, which is nice. They have touch screens, so they can run the Android apps, which means you're going to be, a wealth of applications available. They're going to want to play probably some card games or some, Candy Crush, things like that, and you will be able to play online and Android games. So I think this is I couldn't agree with you more. You're on the exact right track for this.
Okay, I sure do thank you.
I thank you. You're going to have a little harem of people here learning how to use computers from you, Bruce.
Yeah.
I think that's fantastic.
I've been watching you since you were on Tech TV.
Oh, thank you.
And I say my wife bought me my first computer, a PET, with 16 kilobytes of memory.
Oh, man. You know what's funny? That in computer terms, that feels so primitive and ancient, but it really wasn't that long ago, was it, really?
No, it wasn't.
In the scheme of things. Bruce, I think you've picked it. You obviously have learned well, and you've picked exactly, I think, the right thing that I would tell you to get if you had just called in to ask. That those Acers are beautiful. Their price is right, and they're going to love this because it's going to open the whole world to them. You're talking around $300 each. So it's really a great choice. Okay, Bruce. Hey, thank you.
Thank you.
Have fun. 1080p screen. These are really nice nice systems. Our website, techguylabs.com, is available for you 24 hours a day at no charge. We put links in there. I will put a link to that Acer Chromebook. I love that. I am looking forward to trying a new Windows machine. The first Windows machine on ARM, I should have it by maybe by next week. HP NVX2, it's called. They're shipping it out, I think, on Friday. It's a little pricey. It's $1,000. It's running Windows 10S, although you can upgrade it to Windows 10 Pro. And it has a Qualcomm Snapdragon chip in it, not an Intel chip. But because of that, they're claiming 22 hours of battery life, plus an LTE radio that means you could be always on. I'm very intrigued by this as a lightweight portable system. So I'll have a review of that for you, I think, next week, the HP NVX2. They're sold out right now. Obviously, there's some demand, or at least some interest, even at that high price, in a very portable system. More to come. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Stay here. And everybody's going, oh, that thing only has 128 gigs of storage. How will you live? Only 4 gigs of RAM. How can you survive? Well, I don't think it'll be the snappiest thing in the world, but it'll be. I think it might be all right. I think it might be enough. We shall see. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number if you want to talk high tech. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada or Riverside, California. That's where Greg hangs his hat. Hello, Greg.
Hi, Leo. I've got a question for you about we have our email server is through one company, and we want to move it to Squarespace, which is G Suite. I know it's kind of technical, but I'm really scared to do it.
I don't blame you. So do you have a custom email address, yourcompany.com, something like that?
Yeah, and our website, our domain is registered through another company, actually DSL Extreme, and then Squarespace hosts our website.
Way it works right now is DSL Extreme, your web host, web registrar, has the DNS, or does, now we're really getting technical here, or does Squarespace do the DNS?
I
would guess that what it is that generally this is how it works. The registrar, DSL Extreme, has the records, but it points it to DNS servers on Squarespace. But you could easily, here's how it works in a nutshell. When you go to a website, the domain name servers say, well, that name, yourcompanyname.com, goes to this internet address, one on Squarespace, your hosting company.
Uh-huh.
Same thing is available for email. It's called an MX record. It says when mail comes to yourcompanyname.com, it should go to this server. So fundamental bottom of this, you merely need to tell whoever is doing the mail redirection. My guess is DSL Extreme, but it might be through Squarespace. You'll have to figure that out. That has to be modified to send your mail instead to Gmail, to Google.
So the way it's set up now is it's an old POP3 server, right? So
who's got the server?
Oh, I believe it's we log in to get to our webmail to make changes to our webmail. We go to DSL Extreme's
Okay, so this is who's hosting your email right now is DSL Extreme.
Okay, yeah.
So that means they have the domain. This is as I expected. They have the domain name information. They maintain that information. They have one entry. This what's called the CNAME that points to Squarespace. So when you come here for a website, www goes to Squarespace. But they haven't changed the MX record. That's still going to DSL Extreme.
Okay.
And they're the one running a POP server. It doesn't matter what kind of server is running. All that matters is that the MX record in your DNS entry, your domain name system entry, points to whoever you want to have handle the email. Now, some companies, and DSL Extreme may do this, I don't know off the top of my head, may charge you a small fee, a few bucks, to forward mail over to Gmail. Or it may simply be a change in your DNS entry at DSL Extreme. Either way, it's instant, so you want to make sure that you've got it all set up on the Gmail side, because your mail will immediately stop going to that DSL Extreme web server, and it'll immediately start going to Gmail. All the mail that's currently on DSL Extreme will remain there.
Okay. Because what we're doing is we're forwarding our emails to our Gmail account anyways.
Right. So let's simplify that. Uh-huh. And by the way, if you have now set up this G Suite, you can have the G Suite mail do the same thing. It can actually go to the DSL Extreme POP server and say, give me the mail, please. I'm going to handle it from here.
Okay.
So you don't have to change anything. You could actually keep it exactly as it is and just set up your new G Suite to fetch mail from DSL Extreme. In the long run, I think it's best that the mail go direct. It'll be faster if it just goes directly to Gmail.
And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to – so we want to – Squarespace has a pretty easy way to transfer your domain. We want to transfer our domain registry from DSL Extreme to Squarespace. And am I wrong to assume the email will move with it?
You are not wrong. The email will break, though, immediately.
Okay.
Because you will have to – at the same time as you say, okay – Squarespace is going to take over our domain name. Oh, good. At the same time as you do that, you're going to have to make sure that will sever your connection with the DSL Extreme server. Mail will now go immediately to your G Suite, your Squarespace settings. And you probably won't have to change anything. Squarespace is set up to do that, so you probably won't have to do anything at all at Squarespace. So, in effect, by moving your record from your current registrar to the new registrar, Squarespace, moving it from DSL Extreme to Squarespace, when you move that record, at the same time as you do that, there's something called time to live, or TTL. It takes a little while for that change to propagate, but as it propagates, and within a day it will be fully propagated, all the emails start going to this new spot automatically.
Okay. Well, it's still kind of scary, but we're going to try it.
Here's the deal. Squarespace is great this way. Call them. They're going to help you. You're going to say to them, look, we're moving our email. It's currently hosted by DSL Extreme. They also have the domain record. We'd like to move the domain record. Most cases, when you're moving registrars, the new registrar will assist you making the move.
Okay.
And they should handle all the details on that.
Okay.
Yeah. So actually, don't be afraid.
Okay.
Don't be afraid. The good news is, because you've been using Gmail all along, your users are going to feel very comfortable. They'll have a new G Suite address.
Yeah.
I presume that's your company name. Usually,
yeah. The domain name will stay the same. Right.
But they'll be going now to mail. Yourcompanyname.com, something like that.
Right. Right.
Yeah. No, the Squarespace will be great. That's one of the reasons you move to Squarespace for your hosting. And they are a former sponsor. They're not a current sponsor anymore. But one of the reasons you move to them is because they will facilitate this move. They will help you with this.
Okay.
So don't be afraid.
Okay.
I know you're worried your boss is going to say, Smithers, where's my mail?
Well, I'm the owner, so.
Oh, well, then you have nothing to fear but yourself.
Yeah, I can just ruin everything for myself and my wife.
Your wife. Oh, no, you didn't tell me. Your wife's involved. All right, now you got to worry. Now you should be afraid.
Yes.
Because I have this problem, too. When my wife says it's not working, then I start to get scared.
That's why she has the best computer in the office.
Yeah, of course. Yes, same thing here. Yeah, family-run business. Yep, I know exactly how that works. Yeah, you want to keep your wife happy.
Okay.
I don't think it's going to be a problem. But this is where having Squarespace help you will make a big difference, because they do this every day, all day long. It's a very simple thing.
Okay. Sounds good.
Hey, good luck. It's really funny because, and I've said this before, you know, when we first started using computers, we didn't have to really know anything about networks and domains and email servers and all that. It was all very simple. Now you got to be a networking expert, especially if your business is running on this stuff. You have to become an expert in this stuff. That's all right. It's fun. You know what? It's fun. And it's not. And the good news is it's gotten a lot easier. It's not as hard as it used to be. More of your calls still to come. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK-LEO. Website, techguylabs.com. Dick DiBartolo, Mad's Maddest Writer, and our Gizwiz coming up in about half an hour. Stay tuned. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. Thank you to Michael Cozio, our musical director, for providing this great interstitial music for us. Thanks also to Heather Hammond for answering all the phones, like Scott in Woodland Hills, California. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Leo, how are you doing?
Wonderful. How are you?
I am good, thank you. First time, long time.
Good. Welcome.
Thank you. Hey, I've got, I'm trying to cut the cable cord here. The way my apartment faces, I can't get satellite, so I'm stuck to this one company and they're gouging me. So my question is, I want to go with a router, and I don't know which router to really get. I live in a small apartment, two bedrooms, one floor. And I need to know a good Wi-Fi speed that I, you know, so I can stream basically everything to a smart TV, iPad. Stuff
the like good that. News is because it's a two-bedroom apartment, it shouldn't be too difficult. You don't have to go out and buy the more expensive mesh routers that we talk about all the time, like the Eero's or the Orbeez or the Plumes. Those are much more expensive, but they're designed for a lot more real estate. Because people who live in houses have, you know, a big problem with upstairs, downstairs, and, you know, it gets to be very difficult. But two-bedroom apartment, a single decent router should be fine. And you're getting internet. What speed internet are you getting?
I don't know exactly what I have.
That's what's going to determine, really. The router isn't going to – is you don't worry about the router. Worry about your original internet speed. The router, any decent router will pass through the speed pretty close to the full speed. So that's not something you need to worry about. Just hope that you have enough bandwidth from your internet service provider to do all this.
So if I'm streaming, you know, 720, 1080 shows, what speed do you think I should look for?
Generally, I would say, you know, Netflix actually has a page where they say what's required. For high definition, as long as you don't have two other people in the apartment who are watching at the same time, if you have undivided access to that full speed, 25 megabits is more than enough. If you want 4K, they often recommend 50 megabits. That's my, you know, my basic rule of thumb. And it really only more if you've got other people doing other things, taking bandwidth. Remember, it's divided among all the people using it.
Right. And I do have a couple sons that do play games.
Okay.
And they're going to have a TV in their room watching things.
Yeah. So then now you got to, you know, include them in the calculation. If they're going to be, for instance, watching Netflix while you're trying to watch Netflix, then you're going to double the amount of bandwidth you need.
So I should shoot for 50.
Well, yeah, I think 50 is reasonable. Let me tell you what Netflix says. They're lower than I am. They say that if you want standard definition, which, you know, is probably lower than you want, you need 3 megabits. They say 5 megabits is fine for HD and 25 for ultra HD. My experience has been, and maybe that's because, you know, I have other people using it. If you have 25, you should be fine for HD, even if two people are watching. That should be enough for HD.
Yeah, what drives me nuts right now is the buffering, you know.
And that's a result of two things. One, not enough speed, but also inconsistent speed. Who do you get your internet from?
It's Spectrum.
Okay, so it's a cable company. You should be fine. Yeah. Generally, cable companies offer more than enough bandwidth for this, and they're pretty consistent. Now, if it's the apartment complex doing it, they may, you know, that may be less consistent for a variety of reasons. You know, they're splitting it off. They're doing weird hardware things. You got a lot of people using a small amount of bandwidth. So you know what I would do right now? I would just take your computer and go to speedtest.net on your browser and just see what you're getting.
Yeah, I'm honestly, I want to, you know, cut ties with Spectrum totally. So
You don't want to even pay them for internet?
Nope, I want
to. Well, you're going to need somebody to give you your internet, and yeah, you're going right. to want I would say at least 25 megabits.
Yeah, I want to package something with like a streaming service, whether that, and I don't know if you have recommendations on like DirecTV Now or Hulu or Sling.
I use, you know? And it depends where you are, but I think in the LA area, YouTube is very good. I use tv.youtube.com, $35, gives you the local stations, DVRs for up to 5 people, and you could share it with all, or 6 people, you could share it with your whole family. So your kid would have his own DVR. It includes YouTube Red. I bet you your kid watches a lot of YouTube. So that's ad-free yeah. YouTube for them, plus YouTube Music. I think it's a great deal at $35. But, yeah, there's PlayStation View, there's Sling TV, there's DirecTV Now, there's a number of services. This is all, they're all called over-the-top services. That is, they use your internet bandwidth to deliver television. And then if you want, expensive channels like HBO and Showtime or Hulu, you're going to add that. You're going to add it all up. So you have to include internet access plus one of these services, plus whatever premium channels you want to get, plus Netflix if you want that, because they don't include Netflix, Hulu if you want that, because they generally don't include Hulu. So you want to add it all up. It probably, and frankly, once you do, it probably doesn't save you a lot of money over cable, but it gives you a lot more flexibility. It might save you a little bit.
Last thing. Thank you very much.
Sure.
So you're telling me the router's not that big a deal, but really it's the band.
No, get a good router. I would recommend. I go by a company called the Wire Cutter at thewirecutter.com. They test all the routers. They really like the TP-Link C7 Archer. Actually, I don't know if that's their current. Let me see what their current recommendation is. I use Asus ASUS routers, but yeah, you don't have to spend a lot of money on a router. To get more than enough bandwidth, and in a 2-bedroom apartment, that probably be more than enough. You don't need to have to worry about getting extra units or anything like that.
Well, thank you very much, sir.
You're welcome. Let me just check real quickly to see the best wireless router for most people, according to the Wire Cutter. They've changed their recommendation to the Netgear Nighthawk, which is actually very good. That's a little pricey, though. It's almost $200. So I'm not sure it's funny that they've changed their recommendation from what used to be the Archer C7 was under $100. So I'm not sure if that's because as they've tested, they found that people wanted better routers. They also like the Asus RTAC 3200, which I've used for years, is an excellent router, also $200. I guess what's changed, here's the budget pick. They like a Netgear 6700. That's $90. What has changed is you want to get spend more on a router than you think, not $40, not $50, and you probably want to get a new router every few years because the technology's changed, but routers also wear out. So I would agree with the Wire Cutter's picks. I think all three of these, the Netgear Nighthawk, the Asus AC3200 and the Netgear R6700, they're all good. I don't know why they stopped recommending TP-Link. I think that TP-Link Archer C7 is the best budget router and probably more than enough. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. Yeah, I'm not sure why they stopped recommending the TP-Link. But this is Jim Salter, who's great. We've interviewed him a couple of times on the new Screensavers. I trust him completely. So if he says it, I believe it. 8888, ask Leo the phone number. Back to the lines we go. Jeff in Granada Hills, California. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm great. Though, earlier call, when you talked about...
yes?
You talked about how when your wife says something's not working, it's like time to get it fixed?
Yes.
Well, I'm there. I've got a Asus router that's a couple years old. It's a, AC1900.
Yep, nice router, but a couple of years old is maybe the important phrase there.
Yeah, and even when we first got the router, my son's room is just maybe 30 feet down the hall from where the router is installed, but he's always had trouble with connections. I put in a range extender that sits just outside his room, but he still says he has problems, and my wife also. So I'm looking at a mesh router, and I know you've talked about them a million times but never paid that much attention.
Yeah, now that you need one, you want to know, right?
Exactly.
So the idea of these mesh routers, they're really designed for larger spaces, each unit, and they typically come with three, although you can get them with as few as one or two, and you can add them onesie, twosie as you want. But generally, people will use three. Each unit covers about 1,500 square feet. And the theory behind them is that instead of having a single access point where all the bandwidth is coming from, and of course, as you get farther and farther from it, the speed goes down. And if there's walls in between, you might even lose connectivity. You certainly lose bars. Instead of that, you spread the Wi-Fi out throughout the house on these units, these mesh units. They're all equal. That's the thing that makes mesh mesh. There isn't a base station and extenders. That system, which has been around for a while, is not ideal because in order to do extenders, you actually have to slow down the Wi-Fi by half. The extenders.
My son has told me since I put in the extender, things have been even worse.
Slower. Because the extender has to spend half the time talking to the base station, the other half talking to you. It can't talk both directions at the same time, so it's half the speed. So a mesh doesn't have that problem. Mesh units typically have their own back channel. They also are more modern, and they usually have some more sophisticated software in them that does things like checks what kinds of devices you're connected to. And based on information they've had at the start and learned over time, they may modify the topology of your network so that the TV watching Netflix is going to get better speed than somebody down the hall who's just doing email. And so all of that's useful. They have other additional features that I think are important for security. I use several systems. One of my systems, Plume, all of them are good for guests. They have a guest Wi-Fi, and they have usually an automated way of telling the guest what the password is, and you can expire the password. The Plume has three networks, a main network that has full access, a guest network that has good internet access but also can talk to other machines in the network, but a third network, which is great for Internet of Things devices, that only allows internet access, doesn't allow anybody on that network to see other devices on the network. That's a nice security feature. Many of them, like the Eero, have adult content restrictions that you can turn on. Almost all of them have schedules that you can pause the internet at night. You said you have a teenager. This is great. You can say, you know, no internet access after 10. We do this with our teenager after 10 p.m. because otherwise he'll stay up all night. Things like that are very, very handy. You can even on the Eero's, and I should mention, by the way, Eero is a sponsor of some of my podcasts. On the Eero's, you can say to your Amazon Echo, pause the internet. In fact, you can, I love this. Most of these will also do this. You can say, assign devices to users. So Michael, our 15-year-old, I can say, you know, that's his phone, that's his computer, that's his tablet, that's his TV, and I can say, pause Michael's devices. They all go offline, but I can continue to use my device. So all of these things are great. Here's the downside. They typically start around $300. So a good router now is going to cost you around $200, so it's not a huge amount more, but it's definitely sticker shock territory.
Yeah, I've heard you talk about it. I've heard the price, and that's been part of the reason I have put off doing it. But
yeah, but now you have to, because your wife says, fix the internet, honey. Ever since I put in the Eero's, I don't hear that anymore.
So you like the Eero brand?
Yeah, I love the Eero brand, but each of them has different kind of capabilities. Netgear's Orbi, which apparently you can find at discount right now at one of the big box stores, it is the fastest single unit device. So if you only have one machine that needs a lot of speed, that's a great way to do it. But most homes have many devices. I have something like 40 or 50 devices using my router. And that's where mesh really starts to show its strength. It may not have the fastest single device throughput, but it's smart about distributing what internet access you have to all of the devices. And that really helps. So I like the Eero. there's a system I also use called Plume that's a little weird. Plume, you put one, you plug them into the wall socket and you put one per room. So you end up, I have 12 Plume units. So you end up, they're cheaper off the top, but you end up spending more probably by putting one in, because they make little pools of Wi-Fi. Like if you think of Wi-Fi as light, you know, you can't really have a light in the living room that lights up the whole house. You know, they just don't go around walls. It's not great. You want to put lamps in everywhere people are. And that's how the Plume works, with little pools of Wi-Fi where people are. That's another good solution. Orbi's the fastest. I've used that, and I really like it. I'm not as crazy about Google's Wi-Fi solution. I don't consider it one of the better ones. The other thing all of these systems have that is now, I think, absolutely vital is they are updatable over the air. If there's security issues, these companies, because you paid a little more, they're a little bit higher quality, they will fix the security issues automatically over the air. Super important on your Wi-Fi. Everybody's doing mesh now, though. Asus has it. Linksys has it. So you can shop around. You can look at the reviews. My personal favorite is Eero. It's kind of the most balanced in the sense
and
that...
On the Eero, it's pretty easy setup, I think I've heard you say.
Yeah, all of them are very easy setup. They have to be. You will have to have a smartphone, Android or iOS. You'll put the app for the devices on your phone. And in almost every case, you use the app to place the other units, the extension units.
It gives you the strength that says...
It helps. Yeah, it's not quite... I wish it would. It says, okay, put it in the next one. You put it in wherever you put it in. And then it'll tell you, oh, that's too far. I wish it would tell you up front, but it tells you, oh, that's too far. Or, that's great, I'm getting an excellent signal, and then you feel confident you can move on. They're very easy to configure. You will be using the apps, though, to configure them.
Okay. And we've got about 2,500 square feet, single story, and so if one's in the center of the house...
Two should be enough. Yeah. The good news is it's easy to add more if you need it. So just get two to begin with. That'll save you some money. That'll be $200.
All right.
And then if you need more, you can get more.
And then I can put one directly in my son's room. And
he'll never complain again.
Have an issue.
Yeah. Is he gaming?
I'll never see him again.
Yeah.
He's gaming. He's doing a lot of his schoolwork.
Oh, that's good. Okay.
Computer and
YouTube.
He's just having... Yeah. Tons of YouTube. You're just having trouble getting connected.
He'll thank you. And the one, and you will be happy, you and your wife will be happy that they Eero has very good parental controls.
Awesome.
In fact, I use the Eero safety controls around the whole house to prevent malware. Nobody can download malware. You can control adult gambling, violence. It's really a nice system. Highly recommended.
Great.
All right, let us know how you like it. Actually, I recommend it all the time, and I don't always hear back from people. Let me know if you hate it too. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Dick DeBartolo's coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Is this Debbie Harry? What is this, Dick DeBartolo?
No, it's the Gizwiz.
Oh, that's the Gizwiz. I thought it was. Blondie, but no, it's Baldy.
It's Baldy. It's close.
Dick DeBartolo is Mad's maddest writer, and he's also, I'm proud to say, our Gizmo Wizard or Gizwiz joins us each and every week to talk about a crazy gadget or gizmo that he has discovered as he travels about. His domain in Gizneyland.
Yes.
Did you snow? Were you snowed in?
You know what? The city escaped with 2.5 inches.
It was going to be like 2 feet.
Yeah. In Jersey, one town got 30 inches. So
wow.
It was very, but it was very windy. A lot of branches fell and broke some stuff in the yard, but nothing to shovel.
You got the bomb cyclone without the snow.
Exactly.
Good.
Oh yeah. The thunder snow was amazing. It was scary.
The weather is so weird these days. We're making up new names for it.
Yes. The thunder snow.
Watch out for the thunder snow. Oh, you don't want the bomb cyclone. So, what do you got for us, Dickie D? Well,
so, a fan sent in a video about this, and I thought this is so stupid. And then I go, well, wait, it's under $20. I think I should buy one and see how stupid it is.
And it was.
yesterday. It came in very handy. So all right. So finding the mute button on remote control is pretty hard, especially if you're like over 50 and there are 90 buttons there. And the worst part is when the phone rings or someone yells from another room, you get the remote and then you figure which one of these
buttons. If you're hitting the remote's mute button, it's a panic mode. There's a reason you need it, and you need it fast.
Yes.
Sometimes the TV's turned up too loud or whatever. Yeah.
Exactly. So this company has designed only a mute button that is...
Oh, look at that.
No, it's about 2.5 inches across.
It's okay. Like one of those Staples That Was Easy buttons, except it says shut the bleep up.
Exactly. And so you have to
Program it, right?
But Leo, it took 10 seconds. Basically, you hold your remote control up, the back of this button.
I'm buying this.
you click it over to learn. You click mute on your remote control. This button blanks twice. Usually like in 4 seconds. And the one thing to remember is once it blinks twice, quickly click it to use. And then it's programmed.
And because you only have to do that the first time just to program.
The first time. Yeah. And you know what? I tried on a bunch of TV sets just to see how easy
it is. This is awesome.
I set this up just yesterday, and I have the TV on. I'm walking around. I have this laying on the table. The phone rings, and I go, oh. And I look at the caller ID, and it says Warner Brothers. I go, I need to take it.
Yes! Bang! Finally, my movie deal's coming through.
Exactly. Bang. It muted the TV. Actually, it was the new executive editor, Bill Morrison of MAD. And it was great. So I was able to talk to him with nothing in the background.
I love this.
So this thing is really great fun. And also, it's much easier to find than your remote control.
Because it's giant.
It's giant. It's red. It has non-skid little feet on the bottom.
I love this.
So this is really a neat little guy to keep near your nightstand.
It's $20, right?
It's $19.50. I bought it like Monday, and I checked just before the show. It's $19.50, free shipping if you're a Prime member.
Who wouldn't want to have a giant red button on their coffee table that says "Shut the bleep up"?
Yeah, exactly.
Even if it didn't do anything, you'd want.
Yeah,
that.
You know, your uncle comes in and he's rambling on. You don't say anything. You just put this down on the coffee table. And then he thinks, wait a minute, what does that do? Maybe I'll cut this conversation short.
The shut the bleep up button.
Or the smash mute. Yes,
and if you want to find it, Dick has the Amazon link and all the information at his website. That's GIZWIZ.BIZ. While you're there, you can play the What the Heck Is It contest. Brand new contest started at the beginning of the month. It looks like a fingernail paling, but obviously it's not.
Well, I can't even say yes or no to that.
You can't. It could be. The point is, you can get an autographed copy of Mad Magazine, whether you know what it is or not, if you just come up with a good, clever idea. Gizwiz, GIZWIZ.BIZ. And don't forget Dick's great show, which is Gizwiz TV at gizwiz.tv. He does with Chad Johnson. Great gizmos and gadgets, just like that. Shut the bleep up button.
Yeah,
Smash mute. I'm going to order one for every TV in the house. That is so useful.
It's
actually
great.
A fun project. I bet you could, for like $100, you could build your own.
You know, you probably could. And about 3 years of aggravation.
Yeah, Raspberry Pi and IR emitter.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
A little programming.
And then you say, how'd that project go? And you said, I threw it out and I spent $19.50. Bought that big mute button on Amazon.
Thank you, Dickie D. We'll see you next
week. Okay, buddy. See you next
week.
Take care. Okay, bye.
Oh, I love it. He always comes up with the best stuff that you would maybe never even see in real life. Smash mute. It's on Amazon. Last call of the day, I'm sorry to say, but it's John in Montana. I'm happy about that. Hi, John.
Hello. Good afternoon. I appreciate your time. I am interested in a laptop, and I'm wondering what your top two recommendations would be for a reliable instrument, one that would accept DVDs, and sometimes I have a hard time seeing, but something with a large screen, 17-inch or 15.6 screen.
There are some that still have internal DVD drives, not a whole lot. That's really gone by the wayside as physical media has disappeared. And screen sizes on laptops, very few laptop companies still sell 17s because they're so big. Apple stopped. Dell still does. Lenovo still does. Those are my two favorite PC manufacturers, as well as HP now, which is kind of a change for me. I used to really think very little of HP computers, but they've gotten better. What I would look at, though, I wouldn't say I have to have a laptop with a DVD player and a big screen, because you sacrifice portability, you sacrifice battery life, and maybe what you want is a laptop that is portable, has better battery life, but an external DVD drive, you don't have to carry it around, but you can plug it in via the USB port. They're $50. They're not expensive. And when you need it, you've got it, but you don't always have to have it with you. And I think if you really need a big screen for low eyesight, 17 even is that much. Get an external monitor. So in other words, carry the laptop around. You can have a 15-inch screen and no DVD player for lightweight and better battery life. And when you get home, dock it. Have a full-size keyboard, mouse, monitor, 27-inch monitor, and DVD player. That way you get the best of both worlds. That's kind of how I would go. But if you really need that, Lenovo still sells 17s with DVD players. So does Dell. They're my top two. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T, it stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.